Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for being here and tuning in. This evening, we have a repeat guest. Evan Barrett is here in the studio live, which is kind of nice to not be talking to someone over the phone. Hi, Evan.
Hello. Beautiful day.
Indeed. What is it, about 75 out there?
Yep. Well, 68 in the shade.
Okay. I'll go with that.
We'll throw a little shade at it.
Whatever it is, it's absolutely gorgeous. And we're very overdue for some absolutely gorgeous weather. We're going to be talking about corporate responsibility. And in just a moment, I'm going to have Evan introduce himself once again to all of our listeners and a topic of discussion. So sit back. We'll return shortly.
I saw boldly that an endless skyway, a soul below me, that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of a diamond dance. And all around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me.
This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy, and in the studio today we have Evan Barrett. Evan, please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself before we embark on this journey into corporate responsibility.
Well, I'm 38 years in Butte now, so I'm almost a Butte guy. I originally from Red Lodge. I'm retired now. I've been retired for a year, such as it is. Seems I'm more busy in retirement than I was beforehand. But I've spent prior to that almost 50 years in government, politics, economic development, and education. In that activity, of course, I interfaced a lot with businesses and corporations, politics and government. They all intersected together, and that's particularly relevant when you think about the issue of corporate responsibility.
So the topic that, you know, we talked about and that you selected was recent events that have happened specifically with the media mogul Sinclair Broadcast. Why did you want to talk about them?
Well, you know, there's no better place to think of corporate responsibility than how our airwaves are managed. In the United States, airwaves are, some people say they're owned by the public. That's maybe an overstatement, but they are in the public domain by law. And people that have the rights to broadcast over the airwaves do so with the approval of the federal government, and now the entity is called the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. And in order to do that, they're supposed to help provide some public service. It's not just there for them to make money, but there's some public service and engagement in it. And when you think about what happened in this most recent episode and the what it means in the broader context of maybe using the airwaves in ways that are detrimental to a nice, free-functioning democracy, that lead toward monopoly, that is maybe harmful to the public good. That's what made me say, if we want to talk about corporate responsibility, an interesting twist on it right now is, how does the Sinclair Broadcasting recent episode, which got great notoriety, juxtapose with what the law says and what people really have tried to come to expect from our journalism and broadcasting? And how does that all fit together, or is it not fitting together? And I think a pretty good case can be made that right now what Sinclair did is probably abusive of their position of trying to do stuff for the public good, and indicative that if they are successful in broadening their footprint, things will get even worse. I mean, that little broadcasting company out of Baltimore, I believe it's owned by a family. I think they're called Smith.
Yeah.
The Smith family. They used to do cough drops, I guess, but now they do broadcasting. And that company now, if the current proposal, it has not been finally approved yet, but to pick up the Tribune Media occurs, they will be present with television stations in 72% markets that can include 72% of American homes, several hundred TV stations around the country. So this starts to get down to Pravda-like control or ability to at least reach out into homes in that same way. So diversity is strength in a lot of different ways in America, and diversity of ownership of the airwaves is one way we have better strength. But this particular thing is that happened is this blending of editorial and news is very, very troubling to the advancement of democracy when democracy is dependent upon a well-informed electorate. And when the electorate can't tell the difference between news and editorial content, that's where the real concept of fake news comes in. Not just the Trump, everything's fake if it's not for me type of stuff, but people will have a hard time discerning what is real news and what is commentary. And that's something that has been very, the line of distinction between commentary and news has been a line that has been drawn extraordinarily carefully over the last century, and it's starting to be broken down and blurred a lot. Again, not much to the detriment of, I think, a well-informed citizenry.
So democracy, depending upon a well-informed democracy, it's the equivalent of manipulating democracy, which means it's no longer a democracy, because the whole premise behind it is that everybody's informed, has fairly equal access to that information so that they can make their own determinations and decisions about who we elect, who we keep in office, all kinds of issues.
Well, it's important that, you know, there is absolutely room for commentary and editorial comment. I write guest columns to the newspapers. That's on the editorial page. Somebody that reads that knows it's my position and my thoughts, and it's not news. They hopefully believe that when I write that, or when somebody writes in the editorial page editor writes an editorial, that when they cite facts and statistics in their columns, that they're using real information. But nonetheless, it is editorial comment. The news is very, very precious, and you have to be careful not to, you know, if you try to have government control the news, that's where the Pravda stuff comes in. So there's
when you say Pravda.
Oh gosh, I guess I'm dating myself on that. You know, it has been 30 years since the fall of the Soviet Union, so there's a lot of listeners here may wonder, what's Pravda?
You're making an important analogy.
Yeah, Pravda.
Explain.
Pravda was not Russia, but the USSR, the Soviet Union. In the Soviet Union, it was government-controlled media. It was the voice of the Communist Party in Russia was found in Pravda, and that was the official voice of everything in the Soviet Union. And you didn't have 100 voices. You just had one voice. By the way, again, diversity is great. It's great to have 100 voices, and it's great to know when it's news is news and editorial is editorial. And this thing that happened the other day when Sinclair Broadcasting sent a message out that was clearly editorial content, decrying, it was almost echoing completely everything out of some 6 a.m. Donald Trump tweet about the fake news and, oh, you can't believe anybody. And they actually sent that out as commentary and told their news people to read it And there were huge penalties, I believe, if they didn't read it. And suddenly you had that blending of news and opinion that is confusing to the viewer.
Yeah, when it's not explicitly stated as commentary. And I came across this really interesting Washington Post article. It was written by a former employee of Sinclair. In fact, he was a video editor that had been promoted to a producer at KHGI in Kearney, Nebraska. And it was really interesting because this was not an isolated incident. There were many programs that they were being more or less forced to air that were in the same vein. They were essentially programs that wasn't related to local news that Sinclair dictated be played on the stations. And at Justin's station, he kind of ignored, didn't play at all, maybe played about 80% of what they asked them to play. And he usually would denote it as content that they were required to play or required content. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, I think a lot of the public think that this was just, you know, one stunt.
Yeah, just a one-up time.
A media giant.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, this is kind of a pattern in a history, which is even more concerning when you take into consideration the fact that they're going from 30% ownership to over 70% ownership of local news stations.
Well, just think of it this way, too. They're courting the FCC to approve. So they're on their best behavior right now. You give them all those stations, and it's going to be much more egregious in the future. They've already evidenced. I mean, they've got a political agenda they want to accomplish, and not through editorial comment alone. And they want to take advantage of their presence in all these homes. So we can only anticipate it to get worse unless we stand up and fight back against that. And that requires us to talk to our representatives in Congress and so on. Now, in Montana, by the way, one site I went to, and I don't know if it's true, they're in 34 states. They have four sites in Montana, two in Butte and two in Missoula. The KTVM and NBC in Butte, Bozeman, which has a sister, KECI, in Missoula, and KDBZ, which is the NBC that flips over to Bozeman, and then KCFW in Missoula, which is also NBC. When you're watching those stations, just be alert. You know, when they bring Boris Epstein, who was the Trump spokesman, who has become the official spokesperson for political stuff on Sinclair, it's probably identified enough so you know it's his commentary. But it's when these news people are forced to read stuff that is the scary thing. And, you know, it's almost, I was watching some of those news people because apparently there's some threat in this kind of thing because it almost looked like it was a hostage video. Mm-hmm. You know, they were doing their reading with their best professionalism they could with this stuff they were saying. But you could see in their eyes that, why am I here? You know, blink, blink, blink. I think there's some penalties for these people if they don't read this stuff, isn't there?
Well, in Justin's article, he kind of outlines what kind of predicament most of the people that are on the air are up against in that they have a contract. He himself did not have a contract, so he was free to leave the station when he no longer could abide and agree with what they were asking him to do. And the threat above his head was he was told that if he did not do as he was told, essentially his boss would lose his job. And most of the people have contracts, and those contracts state that if they quit, if they resign from their position, they have a financial penalty. So, for example, if they have a $50,000 contract and they resign before that contract is over, they will have to pay Sinclair $10,000. So that's a lot of money, especially when you're unemployed.
Well, yeah, and we all know that people in the local news, whether it be in the newspapers or in the local broadcast media, are not extraordinarily well paid.
Right.
Most of them go into that as with an eye toward journalism, toward public service and dedication to public service, and they like the idea of doing that. And they usually, their careers eventually usually end when they find out, well, I can't sustain my life because I don't get paid enough. And so if you put them under that kind of penalty, I mean, what are you going to do? That's where the hostage video look came from, yep. I guess.
Yep. Get in line and toe the line, so to speak, which is contrary to the whole concept of a free press.
Yeah, well, you know, the First Amendment of the Constitution, you know, we hear an awful lot, you know, we're out here in Montana and around the country, we hear, it's like the Bill of Rights started with the Second Amendment, not a first, but the first one is there, and it's preeminent, and it's about freedom of press is part of it, and freedom of religion and expression, freedom to assemble, and so on. And those freedoms are very, very precious. And the freedom of press is what's under assault right now, openly, by folks who want to create a alternative universe of non-fact information that's politically advantaged to one side or the other. And we have to be vigilant about that. But you know, the folks that when it works its way into broadcast media, the local stuff is what's particularly pernicious about this. When you sit in Butte, Montana, and you watch CBS Evening News, they have an aura of authority about them, but we might think we trust Dan Rather or Walter Cronkite, but we don't know them. But the local news people are perhaps the most trusted people in journalism are local news people, because people have come to expect that there's a certain purity, there's a certain truthfulness in when you're reporting, well, what's happening with the potholes in the streets, you're not worried about somebody putting a political twist on it, right? So that particular purity, if you will, that trust that exists with local media is now being eroded away, because local media started to be not controlled locally, but controlled by a large corporation or large corporations.
So you mentioned a political agenda. What is Sinclair's political agenda? And how do we know that, oh gosh, that was just a public service announcement to be careful that you don't believe everything that you hear on the airwaves?
Well, you know, they're conservative politically. And they have a right to that, by the way. It's just that how does it come out? Mm-hmm. Example, we found out, I think it was Politico that reported recently that in June of 2017, the day after our Congressman Gianforte body slammed the reporter from The Guardian, the head Smith guy sent him a big check after he slammed him and was elected.
How much was that check for? Do we know?
Oh, what did it say? What did it say? I dug that out. Let's see.
Is it like $10 or?
No. Well,
$50,000.
It can only, you know, there's limits to, you can only do like $2,700 to a campaign directly. Mm. So I would just happen to find that, and I don't see a number on it.
I would imagine that Sinclair really doesn't care that much for The Guardian, because they're kind of at different ends of the spectrum.
Again, you know, what I love about America, the debating in American politics, is that we ought to have a vigorous debate about things and ought to be fact-based, and everyone's entitled to an opinion, everybody's entitled to free speech. But you also find when you delve in politics over the years, and I have for many, many years, that people seek to take advantage of whatever structures are there to achieve power, and they will twist and turn and cut into the edges of it and start doing things in a manipulative way to achieve their political ends. And that's why it's hard to be a good listener, a critical reader, is you have to fight through that propensity of people who want to achieve political power to abuse the tools. And now, in this case, it isn't just those folks, but it's the actual owner of the rights to the broadcasting is now starting to chip away at what are kind of the foundations of a good dialogue, a good, truthful, a responsible news media at the local level.
So the opposite or oppositional maybe political agenda would be some, there'd be some pushback there. And the Democrats actually did request that the FCC chairman, I'm not sure the correct pronunciation.
Hard to say.
Arjit Pai? Pai?
Yeah.
Pai. Thank you, Clark. Arjit Pai. They asked Arjit to investigate the fact that this may have been an abuse of the airwaves, and they really didn't get far.
The FCC, remember, there's a membership of the FCC, and if the if there's a political balance on that, that is tilts one way or the other, they often don't rule on things in an objective manner. And they've done some things which I think over the years have eroded, and I think it has to do with the swamp in D.C. and the importance of money and power in politics that that speaks to people at that level, is that we used to have a fairness doctrine, which said that the fairness doctrine said that it was a federal policy that required television and radio broadcasters to present contrasting viewpoints on controversial issues of public importance, and to do so in a manner that was honest, equitable, and balanced. Well, guess what? That got thrown out in 19, I think it came in 49, but it, I think it was thrown out in 87 when Reagan was in. And so no longer does that have to happen. Now, they're still required to, equal time means if a political candidate is saying something, the political candidate opponent has to have the same rights to say or the same amount of space. You can't sell $1 million of time to one candidate and 10,000 to another candidate. You have to make it equally available. But that's the purchasing of political stuff. But the fairness doctrine went away. I operated for many years under the fairness doctrine in the political world, and I thought it was great. I thought it was great. Sure.
Why did you think it was a good thing?
Well, just because you, if you were on the ball politically and you found out your opponents were saying something and it seemed like they were tilting the facts a little bit, the station had an obligation to give you a chance to voice something alternative to that. Now, if you were asleep at the switch, it didn't help you. But because they didn't go out and say, hey, guess what? Yeah. We want you to know this guy said that. But yeah. But it provided that you didn't have to beg for scraps, that you had a right to express a contrary view. And if that isn't the essence of democracy in America, under the First Amendment, I don't know what is. We've kind of gotten a field where now we're saying, you know what really free speech is? Money is free speech under Citizens United. You know, instead of ideas are free speech, money is free speech.
Could you explain that? And who is Citizens United?
Citizens United was a Supreme Court case that was ruled about seven, eight, nine, well, maybe almost a decade ago now. Citizens United decision came up, and basically the Supreme Court said, because corporations wanted to put unlimited money to be able to spend on campaigns in an unlimited independent expenditure fashion, and they said they essentially said two things. Corporations are citizens, and the amount of money they spend is free speech, so you can't limit it. So the more money you have, the more apparent speech rights you have. But I'm afraid that's the status quo under that Supreme Court decision today, and it erodes at the at democracy equally well, and something that has to be vigilantly pursued by many people. This, by the way, Citizens of Montana acted on that in 2012. Citizens of Montana passed an initiative that told our members of Congress and said that it's the policy of the people of the state of Montana that that corporations are not citizens. And it said that money is not free speech. Now, that's the policy in Montana. But we are overridden by a Supreme Court decision and have to fight for every inch of fairness in the way we run campaigns and elections.
So let's talk a little bit about what you and I, general citizens, concerned individuals can do. I don't want to be just a distributor of kind of a bleak situation. I really, truly, strongly believe that power is in the people, still yet, in spite of, you know, mm-hmm. the current political environment. And what is it that we can do?
Well, I don't think it's any different than it's ever been, only it's maybe a little more acute right now in terms of the need, which is, one, as a citizen, be informed. Read up, listen up, know what's right, know what's real. Okay, number
one. Even if it's being spoon-fed to you by your local news station, who happens to be owned by Sinclair, there are other ways to inform yourself. In other words, don't just believe everything you hear.
Mm-hmm. So be a critical listener, critical viewer, critical reader. Be well informed. It always starts with that. Secondly, try to articulate your concerns about this stuff to our elected officials. Sometimes that's frustrating, but you've got to do it anyway. The other thing is, go and vote for people who believe what you believe. And eventually, democracy works from the bottom up. The major thing that makes it work is a vote. And if things get too egregious, the citizens will rise up and say, hell no, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore, okay? So we're going to be like Howard Beale in Network. So we can say that, and we can say it with a vote. Every year we get a chance to vote. And I'd say those are the underpinnings of democracy that we have to pursue always.
Anything else? How about our local viewers who... you know, KTVM and the other stations.
Well, it's a complex thing to talk about, and we're just not going to have time to do it today probably, but is what about boycotting? What about advertisers? Some people are calling advertisers and saying, you shouldn't advertise there. We're not going to buy from you. And money talks to these stations, so maybe that works. But that's a very complex subject of its own and worthy of a separate discussion, I'm sure.
Okay. Well, I guess that means you'll have to come back then once again.
Thank you so much.
And please tell our listeners, how might they reach out to you?
Email is Evan Butte.
Oh, that's...
Evan Butte at Bresnan.net.
There we go. Thank you so much for listening. This is Carol Murphy, and you've been listening to Heartstock Radio. Thanks so much.
And all around me, a voice was sad.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at ButteAmericaRadio.org.
Shining, and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling, as the fog was lifting, our voice was chanting. This land was made for you and me. And as I went walking, I saw a sign there, and on the sign it said no trespassing. But on the other side it didn't say nothing. That sign was made for you and me. In the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people. By the early forefits, I see my people. As they stood there hungry, I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me? Or nobody living can ever stop me as I go. That freedom highway, nobody living can make me turn back. This land was made for you and me.